Russia has held a Russia-Africa summit, and African countries in attendance breathed a sigh of relief when Putin said that he would gift them tens of thousands of tons of grain, despite Western sanctions, which he said made it harder for Moscow to export its grain and fertilizers. Why would Putin make such a generous offer to African countries? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at developments coming out of the Ukraine war, which have repeated scenarios being played out, which includes minimal Ukraine gains, with Russia repelling this so-called counteroffensive with bombardments. First, let me introduce our guests. Andriy Dobryansky, Communications Director, Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, joins us from New York. Also joining us is Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst, who joins us from Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to you both. Andriy, let me first start with you. We want to focus on this grain deal falling apart, but let's go to the most recent development on that, and that is what's happened in what Russia has called an African summit. We had the Russian president saying that he's going to gift African countries tens of thousands of tons of grain despite Western sanctions, which he said made it harder for Moscow to export its grain and fertilizers. Why do you think Russia has done that?
I think it's to distract from the greater problems that are happening in Africa right now. Not only are the Wagner forces still active in several different countries, but Russian forces have been allegedly involved in the coup attempt that has proved successful in Niger. So there's a number of countries that are already perturbed by what's happening, by Russia's involvement, its colonialist history in Africa. But even now, as we see that Putin is not participating in the BRICS summit, we know that members of the South African Republic are interested in obtaining an arrest warrant for any future visit of Putin to South Africa.
Okay, you're putting the BRICS and South African summit there into play. Larry, what do you think? I mean, do you agree with that? Is that what African countries are doing? Because it doesn't sound like when they're being gifted, in this case with grain and other services that Russia has had or has been giving them on the military and security aspect, that they would do such a thing. What do you think about our guest comments there?
Well, our Ukrainian guest is delusional and lying first when he claims that Russia's imperial past in Africa, excuse me, last time I checked, it wasn't Russia that was carting off Africans and sending them into America and other parts overseas to become slaves. The very word Slav comes out of the Ukraine and Russia. So Russia's never done that. Russia has never dominated a country. You total up Germany, France, England, the United States. Yes, imperialist tradition there. So this is just sheer nonsense. What's taking place is we're witnessing the reordering of the post-World War II world, and the U.S. ability to dominate that world is being eliminated.
All right, so that's in the broader sense. Hopefully we'll get into that. Andriy, what do you think, though, in terms of what Putin has said regarding the grain deal? This is I'm reading off what he has said in terms of the promises that he was given did not come about, facilitating his own grain and fertilizer exports. He said those were not met. Tell us why, if you agree or not agree with that. And he named the withdrawal of sanctions on supplies of Russian grain and fertilizers to world markets as one of the main conditions.
Well, it's not true what the Russian president is saying about sanctions against his own country. The Russian sanctions that are targeting Russia will remain in effect so long as it continues to be the aggressor, continues to be the colonialist power that it is, invading countries like Ukraine, Georgia, and others on its periphery, but also sending soldiers, its mercenary soldiers, throughout Africa. In terms of what Putin has promised, unfortunately, that's not really something that's laid down on paper. That's not something that can be really trusted. He has made many promises before, broken nearly all of them. So in terms of what is best for the country, we heard that at the United Nations twice last week when they discussed the grain deal and the fact that Russia unilaterally pulled out of it. So it was a deal with the brokered by the United Nations that Russia would agree to allow these ships to transverse through the Black Sea without being attacked. It is clear that what Russia has been doing since that time, you can't say that you're in favor of making sure that Africa gets enough grain if you literally in one day destroyed 100 tons of peas and 20 tons of barley. That's just in one hit. And they've done that repeatedly over the last week since unilaterally pulling out of the grain deal. So what we heard at the United Nations was countries like Gabon, like Ghana, countries like Sierra Leone, all saying that Russia should continue with the grain deal. But unfortunately, it has pulled out. It has made this promise, but we have yet to see a promise being fulfilled by Russia.
Well, he just made this promise, so we have to wait and see how that pans out. Larry Johnson, let me quote Putin here and ask you what you think. This was in the mix of an accusation that he has leveled against Western countries. He used the term political blackmail. He said instead of helping countries in real need, the West used the grain deal for political blackmail and turned it into a tool to enrich transnational corporations and speculators in the global grain market. What do you think?
I think he's absolutely right. Look, the reality of this previous grain deal was that Europe and China got the bulk of the grain, not the poorest countries in Africa. They only received something like 3% of all this grain, and yet the grain deal was touted as servicing the very poorest countries. The fact of the matter is Russia does not need Ukraine, and Russia does not need Turkey in order to export its grain and to export it where it wants and to accept payment in whatever method it wants. So we'll just have to wait and see, but I firmly believe that Putin will follow up on his word. He's been proven truthful. I mean, he vowed he wasn't going to allow Ukraine into NATO and that he would take military action if that was imminent. And he made good on that. So he'll make good on the grain deal.
Andrich, your response.
Within the course of a week, President Putin swore that he wasn't invading Ukraine and then launched missiles at it. So we know that President Putin is a liar. But in terms of what the grain deal, and this is going back to your main topic, we know that within a week of the grain deal being signed last year, that we had the ability of grain prices to drop by 20%. They were artificially inflated by the fact that Russia was blocking grain to North Africa, to the Middle East, to South Asia. But it was also the effect of grain, worldwide grain prices, prices that are being affected in America, in South America. It is the price of grain which really affects sub-Saharan Africa. And so the canard that the Russian Federation put out about grain not actually physically going to those countries, that is obviously something that a child would try to understand, international grain deal. Here, what we're talking about is the fact that many countries have expressed by their leadership at the United Nations that Russia's unilateral pulling out of the grain deal will hurt Africans. We know that from those countries' leaders.
All right. What comes about here, and I'm curious, Larry Johnson, if you can answer this, is how the U.S. has reacted when it comes to Africa. The most recent, July 24th, the U.S. envoy heading to Africa to address Russia's grain deal exit. This is right before Russia made that announcement. This is Brian Nelson, who was the U.S. Treasury Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. And then you had also just I believe it was last month, where you had a U.S. sending an envoy to Africa to tell African countries the impact of Russia's war on food and energy prices. But really, the thrust of it was the fact that he wanted, or the U.S. wanted, to wean off African countries from Russia, lure them away from Russia. Is that what we're looking at when it comes to the U.S. goal vis-a-vis African countries?
Look, the U.S. has enjoyed the luxury of being the dominant world power since the end of World War II, because of its combination of nuclear weapons, setting up the international financial institutions, dominating in the United Nations, and then being able to use its economic power by virtue of having the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency to blackmail countries, coerce them into doing what the United States wants. What has Washington and Biden and his team now terrified is that they realize they've tried to use sanctions to cripple Russia, and it's done the exact opposite. It's set Russia free. And in setting Russia free, Russia is able to deal directly with the various governments in Africa and deal with them on an adult level as equals. The tradition of Western imperialism still reeks to high heaven. And the Brits, the French, the Germans, and the Americans, my own people, have a history of abuse in Africa. And that's turning around. That is what's going on here is the complete realignment of the rest of the world the world that the United States once dominated. And that's part of that is being accomplished because the dollar is no longer going to be the only reserve currency in the world. So the Africans who are smart are recognizing they don't have to kowtow anymore. They don't have to put on their Uncle Tom act and shuffle out with a hand outstretched to get assistance from Washington. They can stand up and be their own men and women and walk free and independent.
All right, Andrej, you talked about how African countries are turning against Russia, if I understood you correctly. You heard our guest there, and all fingers are pointing at what our guest is saying to be the case in terms of the inclination to move away from the West, in particular the U.S. Why do you think that African countries are moving away from Russia?
I was pointing out that African countries, through their leadership at the United Nations, have condemned Russia's pulling out of the grain deal and have asked Russia to go back into the grain deal. So that's one thing. The second is that African countries, specifically the three African countries sitting on the Security Council when Russia started the full-fledged aggression in February of 2023, viscerally condemned Russia for its colonialist actions, given their colonialist history, given the fact that they did not have the right to draw their own borders.
What colonial history? Be specific.
What is happening?
Where did Russia colonize in Africa? What you're saying is a lie. Where did they colonize in Africa? Name one country.
I'm just repeating the words of the Ghanaian ambassador at the United Nations.
You're repeating lies. Stop lying. There's not one country in Africa.
I am respecting the countries of Africa as opposed to what you are doing, as opposed to what Russia is doing when it sends armed mercenaries into African countries, including Chad, including Niger, which we're literally in 24 hours of a coup that Russia enabled in Niger.
You have no proof of that. You have no proof of that.
Like little green men, we will see the proof of that.
This is the second time. Sure. Hold on. Andrej, this is the second time he refers to Niger, and now you're saying that Russia enabled the coup? Well, we do need to find out where that information is coming from and how if you can expand on how you are saying Russia is enabling this.
It's enabling it by having armed mercenaries actively in the country. That is without a doubt. That is something that is documented in photographs and videos. We know that armed Russian mercenaries are on the ground in Niger.
What about the other countries that are using Russian forces that you refer to as mercenaries?
What about them?
Well, they're in security cooperation with the countries that used to have, for example, French, soldiers in their country that they booted out. So,
yes.
Can you explain that, how that stands then with them accepting Russian, forces or mercenaries, as you call them, into their country in order for them to give them protection or other services?
Well, they are Russian mercenaries. They are not regular Russian armed forces. These are Russian mercenaries that are deployed in those countries. They have destabilized those countries. That is a fact that has been made known very clearly at the Security Council level in public hearings of the Security Council about what Russia has been doing. And we do know that Russia has been active on the ground in Niger in the lead up to the coup.
Okay.
If somebody wants to say that we need to wait some time, I am firm in my conviction, just as we were when we saw little green men enter Crimea, that Russia will have to take a responsibility for this and be punished at some tribunal, as the world has been demanding, because Russia has broken the peace.
Larry Johnson, your reaction to our guest there?
It's just nonsense. I mean, look, the French, the Germans, the Brits, the United States have troops deployed throughout Africa. So what our Ukrainian friend is saying is it's okay if the West does it. But if Russia enters into any kind of military cooperation with a government in Africa, then all of a sudden it's an international pariah. The double standard on this is unbelievable, but it is typical because it was Ukraine that attacked the people in the Donbas in 2014. It wasn't the people in the Donbas that attacked the Ukrainian army. It was the exact opposite. And for 9 years, Ukraine has been killing civilians and the West has kept silent and said nothing. So what's happening right now is our Ukrainian friend is so richly illustrating. He is panicked because the promises the West made were basically they agreed to rape Ukraine for their own benefit, use Ukraine as cannon fodder in order to try to ultimately break up Russia. That plan's going up in smoke. It's not working. Russia's influence as a global power is expanding, not diminishing.
Andres?
Well, if we want to talk about sexual violence, yes, we can specifically refer to the Special Rapporteur's report about what Russia does. Specifically in Ukraine, sexual violence is perpetrated by Russian forces against women as old as 82, against children as young as 4. This
That's
has happened
lie.
On a mask.
That's a lie.
Again,
that's
if people
guys,
want to claim
guys,
that there
you,
are war
the Ukrainians
crimes
are the ones doing the human
if,
trafficking. You're the ones doing the human
people,
trafficking. The trafficking
if
of
people
children.
Want to claim
the
that there
of,
are war crimes happening, then we would have seen at least a case presented at the International Criminal Court, a case presented at the Court of International Court of Justice. But that simply hasn't happened because the evidence has shown that it has been Russia perpetrating these war crimes, whether it's the war crime of MH17, which was again brought up at ICJ just in the last month, whether it's the warrant served against the Russian president. Those warrants aren't being served against other nations on the UN Security Council. It's just not happening.
Well, the
yeah,
UN
because
Commission...
It, because it's unbalanced, because it's a crooked system, a crooked, corrupt system. A system where Joe Biden gets to send his son Hunter into Ukraine to sit on the board of a major energy company. A drug addict, a guy who indulges in prostitutes, proven, and yet Ukraine wants to pay him almost $1 million a year? I mean, look at the corruption that is right in front of your nose, and yet the United States wants to pretend that Russia's the bad guy here. Sorry, go cry in your beer.
Well, I have to say about the war crimes, Andrej, correct me if I'm wrong, based on just an entry that was made
sure.
in September of 2022, where the UN Commission concluded the war crimes were committed by both Ukraine and by Russia, but mentioned both. So there have been war crimes committed by both sides. But let's move beyond this. We've talked about the grain deal.
Well, I would specifically, you know, mention the things that I was mentioning, whether it's sexual violence. We do not see that in that report that you're citing in terms of happening on both sides. What that report from September 22 specifically cited was the detention of prisoners of war, of which they are being monitored by international observers. That's not happening on the Russian side. And there was two additional reports released in June specifically about children in war. And this one is specifically tragic because this is the first time that a sitting member of the Security Council was cited
Got
as
it.
A country that is harming children in conflict.
Okay.
Ukraine, who has been bombarding the Donbass, targeting civilian areas for over 9 years. Yeah, great concern for the
children
there.
When were you in Donbass?
I've been to Kiev, or as my favorite is all these Westerners going calling
Donbass?
It Kiev, Kiev, using
when?
The Russian pronunciation.
Name me one time you've been in Donbass. Name me one time in history.
I don't have to go to Donbass to recognize what's going on and what you've done.
And
it's
stay
actually
in Florida
being
and talk on the internet
because
you're not an expert. You don't go to the United Nations. Don't go to Donbass.
All right, let's move on because we just got a few minutes left here. Let's find out how things are going on the ground. Now, it's been about a week. I think it's been about a week now that we had this report that Ukraine was provided by the U.S. with cluster munitions. Larry, this question to you. So you got a week that went by. What's happened? What we hear is, let me take the word of what the Ukrainian side has said, that there's been minimal advances that were made. In a matter of a week, maybe it's too little of a time, but you would think that there'd be more advances made. We keep hearing about minimal advances made by the Ukrainian side, and then Russia either repelling and then attacking, bombarding, I should say, Ukraine. What is this war all about? Is this what it's come down to after over 500 days?
The West is using Ukrainians as cannon fodder. It's that simple. Ukraine does not have combat air. They don't have fixed-wing aircraft that can fly to the front lines to provide close air support for Ukrainian troops. They don't have rotary-wing aircraft in any supply that can provide a similar mission. They don't have mobile air defense systems that are working and functioning to keep Russian air systems from attacking. They don't have mobile artillery. And they're running out of shells, which is why even Joe Biden admitted, well, we don't have enough, so we got to send them these cluster munitions that have been sitting in a warehouse for 30 years because we don't have anything else. And yet Russia, on every single one of those, has the exact opposite. The Ukrainians are being sent on a suicide mission. The one thing I would say, I rarely agree with Zelensky and Zelensky, the general governing the army, but they're correct. They were coerced into this offensive without having what they would need in order to even have a snowball's chance in hell of succeeding. They're getting crushed. They're suffering catastrophic losses, and they're not going to succeed.
Andrej, Yuri Isak, an advisor to Ukraine's defense minister, has said, quote, there's nothing new happening at the front lines. In the south, we are moving forward slowly but surely. Do you think that's enough after 500 days of war?
As I mentioned last week and the week before that, there's about a kilometer to 2 kilometers of daily advancement, whether it's in the southern front or the eastern front. That's been happening on a regular basis, even before the DPIKMs, the dual-purpose munitions, came. The dual-purpose munitions haven't been used recklessly, as many people were feared in the West. They have been used specifically at the minefields that have been littered throughout Ukraine, about 20 to 30% of Ukraine's territory. And again, this is the largest country in Europe. 20 to 30% of it now has mines. So using the cluster munition, the dual-purpose munitions that come out of the American-made howitzers, those enable Ukraine to make steady progress. But without additional demining equipment, you won't see a swift advance just because Russia has spent several years not just laying down trenches, but really putting down the barriers to having anybody cross those areas. So the cluster munitions, the dual-purpose munitions, absolutely, they are helping in a very limited way, but you're not going to have more than 1 or 2 kilometers of progress, as we've seen over the last 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, let's see here. I got the last question to give to you, Larry. Looking at what has been called a two-track diplomacy, this has been a piece of news that has come out in the past couple of weeks, where you had, from what these sources have said, former U.S. officials to have held secret talks with Ukraine. You also have had the CIA director, July 1st was the entry, William Burns, going on a secret trip to Ukraine to discuss plans for a ceasefire negotiation, to hoping for it to happen by the end of the year. What do you make of this, if you agree, if that is indeed true? And also the timeline that William Burns has set by the end of the year, which is in about 5 months. Do you think that this war is being approached by the U.S. for an end, or what are we looking at here?
Yeah, no, the U.S. and NATO are getting ready to cut Ukraine loose. They're going to be abandoned. Ukraine's been made a lot of promises, and the West is going to betray another people, just as they betrayed people in Afghanistan and South Vietnam and Libya, and just, you know, go down the list. What you're starting to see is a couple of themes emerge. One, it's being said both in the United Kingdom and in Washington, D.C., that we gave Ukraine everything they needed. We gave them all the vehicles, all the tanks, all the weapons, et cetera. But it's just been their poor tactics. It's been Ukraine's fault that they've not succeeded in this offensive. So that line is being put out there now to build the excuse that when the United States going to declare victory, that because you've already heard Biden and Blinken saying, oh, Russia's lost. So they're going to come out and say, oh, we've accomplished, mission accomplished, Russia's lost. We're pulling out. Ukraine, nice knowing you. Because what made Ukraine so attractive in terms of its natural resources, those are now under the control of the Russians, and the Russians aren't giving them back, and Ukraine doesn't have the military power to take them back. So I think by the end of the year, we'll likely see this war over.
All right. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. But let me thank Larry Johnson, their former CIA analyst, and Andrej Dobryansky, a pleasure, Communications Director, Ukrainian Congress Committee of America. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Taiwei and the team, it's goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 21st verse of chapter Nur.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتبعوا خطوات الشيطان. ومن يتبع خطوات الشيطان فإنه يأمر بالفحشاء والمنكر ولولا فضل الله عليكم ورحمته ما زكى منكم من أحد أبدا ما زكى منكم من أحد أبدا ولكن الله يزكي من يشاء والله سميع عليم.
O you who have believed, do not follow the footsteps of Satan. And whoever follows the footsteps of Satan, indeed, he enjoins immorality and wrongdoing. And if not for the favor of Allah upon you and His mercy, not one of you would have been pure ever. But Allah purifies whom He wills, and Allah is hearing and knowing.
We said regarding this verse that it is so important to notice the khutuwat al-shaytan, the steps of the Satan, because some people are engaged in committing sins without themselves noticing it. It is because they are drawn by Satan into committing sins step by step, gradually, invisibly, because the evil thoughts, evil deeds penetrate the minds of the people invisibly without them noticing it. So some believing people will get familiar with the wicked people. They do not like their actions. They do not like their wrongdoings. But after attending their parties, after thinking of the possibility of committing the sin, they will think about it. And finally, they will commit those sins. And then they will be seen step by step getting closer to being called the committers of the worst sins. And this is the importance of this khutuwat al-shaytan that the verse warns us about.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمام
مثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, divine grace and bless has different reasons. We translated the verse as saying, وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يُزَكِّي مَنْ يَشَى. We translated it by saying, but Allah purifies whom He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, pleases. And we said that Allah does not guide any people without any reason. Unless attempt and exertion is carried out by that servant, Allah will not do any guidance. He will not confer any kind of grace. But when the person starts to get closer to the Almighty Allah, to go to the path of guidance, Allah will hold his hand. Even though he might not be saved by himself, but Allah will take his hand. Because he is ordered by the Almighty Allah to try to go on this path. And that's why he will be saved. But now, we will have a look at another kind of translation. It is possible that this word man is referring to that very person, I mean to that very servant. وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يُزَكِّي مَنْ يَشَى could possibly translate it into saying, but Allah purifies whom He pleases. I mean, the servant who pleases. And when the servant himself is worried about being saved, when the servant himself is worried about being pure, not only he tries to purify himself, but also does his best to save the society from being corrupted as well. Because he knows that society is just like the second home. Whenever the society is corrupted, all the people living in the society will be corrupted as well. That's why this religion, Islam, is so much against some sins that uncover the sins. Like backbiting. Because backbiting, one of its aspects is retelling the other's defections. Retelling other sins. And this is a very important issue. You must regard society as your second home. And this is what the person who does this will worry about. Meanwhile, we must pay attention to the words zakat and tazkiyah. That these two originally means to grow and to cause to grow. But in some, actually in most cases, they have been applied in the sense of to become clean and to clean something. They may have one root because no growth and development occurs when evils and corruptions are not got rid of. So at first, you must purify yourself and then you can start getting closer to the Almighty Allah. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
During the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, culminating in Tasawwuf and Ashura, eulogists recite the events of the Battle of Karbala, and Islamic scholars elaborate on the underlying message of Imam Hussein's stance against tyranny.
Tasawwuf is the ninth day of the lunar month of Muharram. It is considered a very important religious occasion as Muslims worldwide commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Ashura, which literally means the 10th of Muharram, is the day Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in 680 AD as they fought courageously for justice against the much larger army of the Umayyad Caliph Yazid I. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a hero that transcends time. His goodness makes him a moral example for all human beings worldwide, and foreign students at Tehran University have not missed the chance to mourn for the much revered Imam along with the entire Iranian nation.
We all gather here, irrespective of religion. Here in our Hayat, a lot of students who belongs to the different sects like Ahl Sunnah and other sects as well, they work for the love of Imam Hussein.
The very popular phrase, Hubbul Hussein Yajma'ana, this is the actual meaning of it, that everyone from around the world, no matter of their background, can come together and commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein for one message, the message of Islam, the message of the grandfather Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Participating in Hayat means like propagating the message of Imam Hussein, which is justice and unity.
Tearful mourners take part in rituals while educating the younger generation about the sufferings of Imam Hussein. The processions continue until noon. After the prayers, people line up for lunch. Many people consider it an honor to serve the lovers of Imam Hussein, and that is why they give away food not just to the needy, but also to those that have been taking part in the processions.
Cooking for a large crowd is very difficult, but we enjoy serving the lovers of Imam Hussein. It's an honor. Today we served about 3,500 meals.
The positive vibes that we get on this day is simply incomparable to any other experience.
The mourning rituals of Tasawwuf and Ashura are considered an important part of Iranian culture, mostly because of the opportunity to reflect on Imam Hussein's values, his way of life, and what he stood up for. Gizumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
People in Afghanistan have been commemorating Muharram in large gatherings, under the rule of the Taliban and amid security challenges. Hafta Aswa falls on the ninth day of the Islamic month and is devoted to Imam Hussein's brother, Abul Fadl al-Abbas. To mark the occasion, thousands of mourners converged on one of Kabul's oldest shrines. Participants expressed their affection and devotion to the martyrs of Karbala and honored their sacrifices.
The school of Imam Hussein taught us the lessons of heroism and freedom. Imam and his companions sacrificed themselves in the path of religion, justice, and truth. They stood for the future of Islam and humanity.
In all our processions, we witnessed both Sunni and Shia people actively taking part. They beat on their chests, recite elegies, and distribute food shoulder to shoulder with each other. This bonding and solidarity is getting stronger year after year as more and more people learn about Imam Hussein and his revolution.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims closed their businesses and took a day off to grieve over the tragedy of Karbala. Here at Khatam al-Nabiyyin Mosque, people from different backgrounds observed Ashura as a common Islamic heritage. They emphasized the importance of Islamic unity in the face of global arrogance and condemned the recent desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden and Denmark.
We can sum up the message in Gola Ashura in one sentence, and that is resistance against the arrogant and tyrannical ruler of the time. The Afghan people proved that they are the true followers of Imam Ali and Imam Hussein by fighting and defeating the Soviet Union, the British Empire, and the United States.
Insulting the Holy Quran in Sweden and Denmark is an act of hatred and enmity toward Islam and its high values. This heinous act was against all universal and human values, and this was an insult to the sanctities of about 2 billion Muslims in the world. We condemn this insult and want it stopped.
Muharram ceremonies in Afghanistan faced some limitations by the Taliban security forces this year. The Taliban authorities cited security reasons for the measures, but many Shia Muslims are suspicious of their motive. Ashura is the call of liberty and resistance against tyranny. The ceremonies held here show people have not forgotten the steadfastness and heroism of Imam Hussein and his companions hundreds of years after the tragedy of Karbala. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Air Force has wrapped up the 11th edition of aerial drills codenamed Defenders of Velayat Sanctuary. During the two-day nationwide maneuvers, Air Force units conducted a full range of operations and exercised various tactics using drones, fighter jets, transport, logistical, and refueling aircraft, as well as air ambulances. The operations were conducted over various areas from the Persian Gulf to the northwestern and northeastern regions. The main stage of the drills kicked off in the central province of Isfahan on Sunday night, as fighter jets and bombers carried out nocturnal operations and detonated the mock enemy's ground targets with Qasid-upgraded standoff missiles. The Iranian military drones also conducted major operations. Various combat, reconnaissance, and electronic warfare UAVs, such as Kaman 12, Karar, Mohajer 6, and Arash, destroyed targets using different modified bombs with pinpoint accuracy. On the sideline of the drills in Isfahan, the chief of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, hailed the Air Force for achieving the main objectives of the maneuvers, saying the country's military preparedness prevents enemies from taking any hostile action.
The Army's Air Force has provided a very suitable and acceptable level of security for Iran's airspace from the north to the Strait of Hormuz and the three islands of the Greater Tomb, Lesser Tomb, and Abu Musa. With this level of readiness, no enemy has the capability to penetrate and violate the airspace of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Major General Bagheri also said the power, readiness, and vigilance of the Air Force will constantly improve, promising a brighter future ahead. Iranian military experts and technicians have in recent years made substantial headway in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous equipment, making the armed forces self-sufficient. Homegrown Iranian military products have also found many clients in the world. Iranian officials have repeatedly warned that the country will not hesitate to strengthen its military capabilities, which are entirely meant for defense.
This massive exercise is aimed at bolstering preparedness of the Iranian Air Force. It also serves as a clear warning message to the enemies of the Islamic Republic against any act of aggression. Mahdi Abbasian, Anorak.
The United States Federal Reserve raised the interest rate once again, reaching its highest level in 22 years, with no indication for when it will return to normal.
We'd be comfortable cutting rates when we're comfortable cutting rates, and that won't be this year, I don't think. Inflation remains well above a longer-run goal of 2%. Growth in consumer spending appears to have slowed from earlier in the year. Although activity in the housing sector has picked up somewhat, it remains well below levels of a year ago, largely reflecting higher mortgage rates.
Low consumer spending spells major trouble for an economy in which consumer spending provides 70% of GDP. The housing sector just saw its first price decline in 6 years, and housing is the primary financial asset for the average family.
A well-known byproduct of prolonged high interest rates is that it will cause precarious businesses to go bankrupt and provoke mass unemployment. Data shows this is already taking place.
Corporate bankruptcies just hit their highest first-half levels since 2010. Planned layoffs are at the highest first-half levels since 2009. The damage done by prolonged high interest rates is revealed by the highest level in years for credit card, car loan, and other debt, and all while still failing to reduce record prices for the most basic goods.
People are suffering from it, and a lot of more people are going to food banks to get food because they can't afford to buy a lot of the food. And also the government has cut food subsidies for people who in need.
Despite the economic hardship, Washington has ended key coronavirus-era programs, with health insurance just revoked for millions of people. States are reporting their first increases in years for their poverty rates, all of which contributes to President Joe Biden's near-record-low approval rating.
Yeah, they might cause Biden to lose the election because he's not doing enough about inflation. I'm sure he knows that. I mean, people are going to, whatever, if it's going to be Trump versus Biden or whoever, people are going to vote for where the economic situation, where they think it's going to be better. Because most people see the two parties as being the same.
There are other ways to curb excessive prices that don't burden the working class, such as price controls, limiting corporate profits, preventing price gouging, and increasing wages. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
New long-range precision strike gear for Iran's naval forces. The Abu Mahdi naval cruise missiles give naval vessels of both the Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps the capability to target hostile elements 1,000 kilometers away.
The mass production of the Abu Mahdi cruise missiles allows us to hit hostile targets kilometers away. Even moving targets approaching us from the sea can be hit from unknown locations.
Named after Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the senior commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, who was assassinated alongside top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in 2020, the Abu Mahdi class of cruise missiles is one of the latest products of Iran's aerospace industries to be delivered to the armed forces.
The missiles that we received today can be launched by different sea and land platforms toward designated targets and can also be used on our destroyers.
The fully homegrown naval cruise missiles are equipped with artificial intelligence, an important feature that increases Iran's capability to hit hostile targets with pinpoint precision.
The Abu Mahdi naval cruise missile has distinguishing features in terms of precision strikes and destructive power. Most importantly, it travels at low altitudes and it is therefore capable of radar-evading maneuvers.
This is all in line with Iran's defense doctrine, emphasizing that peace and security in the region should be achieved only by regional countries.
The message that this new addition to our arsenal sends to the world is that the Islamic Republic of Iran attaches great importance to maritime security. That is mainly because security in our region can affect major business and economic transactions on a global scale.
The new naval cruise missiles immensely expand Iran's naval defense coverage zone and allow naval units to broaden their operational range.
The fully homegrown Abu Mahdi long-range cruise missile once again puts the spotlight on Iran's defense capabilities, as the Islamic Republic of Iran plays an important role in providing peace and security in the region. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Verses from the Holy Quran decorated the streets of the Yemeni capital, where Yemenis showed their anger and condemnation at yet another act of desecration of the Holy Quran in Denmark. Ansarullah officials who spoke at the rally announced that any actions aimed at insulting Islam will be met with severe consequences against perpetrators.
Their continuous desecration of the Quran indicates how they underestimate the Muslim world's power, and the reason they continue to insult us is because of Arab regimes' weakness. These regimes refuse to mobilize to protect Islam and our holy book, Quran.
In a time when Arab regimes remain silent and normalize relations with the Zionist entity, the Yemeni people came out to declare their unwavering support for the Book of God and to condemn these actions that aim to attack the spirit of our faith. Yemeni people will always be at the forefront of protecting Islam.
According to protesters, the burning of the Quran in the West is not accidental. They believe that the American Zionist lobby is behind these actions. Additionally, they believe the West, led by the U.S., is hell-bent on spreading its corrupt, godless ideology throughout the Muslim world.
We call on all Muslims to come out and protect Islam and no longer remain silent. No doubt, it is the American Zionist lobby that controls all European nations who are behind this. They target our Islamic morals and principles. These actions, however, will only strengthen our determination to protect our religion.
Last week, Yemen became the first Islamic nation to impose a ban on all Swedish products following the desecration of Quran in Stockholm last month. It remains to be seen whether the Yemeni government will ban Danish products. Another Quran burning incident has taken place in another Western country, where Islamophobia is on the rise. As expected, the Muslim world has come out to condemn the move. But as history has proven, condemning the act will simply not stop the repetition of such sacrilegious moves. These protesters say more needs to be done to protect Islam. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
Representatives of religious minorities have met in the Iranian capital Tehran to condemn the desecration of Muslims' holy book Quran, saying that such a sacrilegious act is aimed at creating discord and division among followers of different religious beliefs.
They condemned repeated desecrations of the Holy Quran and Islamic sanctities in Sweden, noting that the Swedish government is fully responsible for the consequences of provoking the sentiments of the Muslim world.
Such insults to Islamic sanctities are a perfect example of organized violence in a hostile move against 2 billion Muslims across the world, God-believing people and followers of divine religions. Desecration of religious sanctities is rejected in all faiths. The recent desecrations in Sweden is considered a heinous crime and is unacceptable.
The recurring incidents of the desecration of Islamic sanctities in Europe, particularly in Sweden and Denmark, have drawn outrage across the Muslim world in recent weeks, especially here in Iran. In the Iranian capital Tehran, demonstrators gathered in front of the Swedish embassy to protest against the sacrilegious move. Moreover, millions of people took to the streets in Tehran and other major cities after Friday prayers this week to voice their anger over the incidents in Sweden and Denmark.
The sinister plot hatched by the enemies of Islam is not limited only to this period of time. The enemies of divine religions have always tried to sow the seeds of discord among their followers. But they should know that followers of Islam and other divine religions are vigilant and will not allow such insulting acts to create division and discord among them, and they get even more united in the face of the enemies.
Any insult to religious sanctities and divine books anywhere by anyone is deplorable. Any freedom of speech which is meant to violate the dignity, values, and religious sanctities of good and God-loving people is not freedom of speech and has no value and is strongly condemned.
Muslim protesters have demanded punishment for the perpetrators, calling for the boycott of Swedish and Danish products.
Representatives of divine religions here believe that branding such moves as acts of democracy and freedom will only further fuel terrorism and extremism across the world, the consequences of which will boomerang on the West before any other side. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Quran and Imam Hussein. In the name of God, welcome to this program. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is equivalent of and analogous to Quran. The Holy Quran is the book of human education. Imam Hussein is also the great educator and teacher of human beings. This equivalence and analogy has been explicated by the Prophet in the Hadith Thaqalain, or two weighty things. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Indeed, I leave behind among you two weighty things, the Book of God and my progeny. They will never part from each other till they join me at the Pond of Kawthar. You will never go astray, nor will you slide away as long as you held them fast." From this hadith, we can understand that the Book of God, that is the Holy Quran, and the progeny of the Prophet pursue the same goal, namely the guidance of mankind towards God. Dear listeners, ayah or verse 28 of surah or chapter Zumar reads, "An Arabic Quran without any deviousness, so that they may be God-wary." It is said on Imam Hussein that he never deviated from the right to the wrong, even a single moment. In other words, just as the Holy Quran opens the ways of guidance in front of mankind, Hussein, peace upon him, also takes their hands and leads them towards the ways of guidance and salvation. From the very first moment that he started his divine journey toward Karbala, he thought of nothing but rescuing the people from deviation and corruption. He never thought of worldly posts and luxuries. His epic combat against the corrupt and tyrannical Yazid and his government became the touchstone for discerning between truth and falsehood. Quran is the eternal miracle and the manifest proof of God, as we read in Ayah 157 of Surah Al-An'am. "Indeed, there has come to you a manifest proof from your Lord." Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is also the manifest proof of God which will never be forgotten or weakened. In numerous texts of ziyara, or standard form of salutation to Imam Hussein, we address him saying, "I bear testimony that you are the manifest proof from your Lord." So this is another reason to prove that Imam Hussein is parallel to the Quran.